Christmas, stranger.
Hi, I'm Rob Poynton from the Innsmouth Book Club. Join me and my fellow guide, John Chadwick, as we take you on a fortnightly tour of Innsmouth. We visit places such as the Picture House, the Library, and Innsmouth Museum to discuss all aspects of weird fiction, whether it be book, film, music, TV, or art. As well as that, we stop over at the Gilman House to have a chat with a resident guest. That includes authors, artists, musicians, in fact, Lovecraftian creatives of all types. You can find our free shows on Patreon, and there you can also sign up as a patron, which brings you bonus content, plus a monthly PDF copy of Innsmouth News, which features articles, author spotlights, all the latest news and reviews, and more. You can find us at patreon.com/InnsmouthBC. We hope to see you soon, because remember, Innsmouth isn't just a place, it's a state of mind.
You're listening to KZOM, Oleander Public Radio.
Welcome to People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos.
Hey everyone, welcome to the People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. I don't know what that rhythm I was trying to do.
I felt it.
I wouldn't be able to keep up.
All right. I was trying to rock it in triplets, but I couldn't quite do it. Anyhow, welcome to People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. I am a trio of hosts. One of these days, I'll get someone else to introduce the show for me. People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. I'm DB Spitzer. To my virtual left, to my virtual right, I have Gretchen Brooks, David Heath, and IB DB Spitzer. So, hey.
Would you say we're a triumvirate of hosts?
Yeah.
I'd say that.
Okay. Well said.
Mm-hmm.
If I use it myself.
How are we all doing this week?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Just busy.
So, this week, we are talking about vegetables and fungi.
And not from you, Goth.
No. Yeah. No, we're from someone else. But was it influenced by? Is the question of the week for everything. But we have some Ramsey Campbell, and then we have some Toho amazingness.
Yeah.
So we've got my personal favorite experts on Ramsey Campbell and Toho in-house, my co-hosts, David Heath, Gretchen Brooks. Yeah, I know. This feels like a special episode because it's like, oh, wow, I don't have to, like...
I know. I was counting on Dave to know all the things about Ramsey Campbell because, yeah, I'm... that is not my... I started reading the story and I was like, uh-oh, this feels like I should have read other things first.
So you were reading the insects from Shy Guy?
Yes.
So, yes, that's part of the Titus Crowe series. And I have to admit, I have not read that one.
Oh.
And Titus Crowe, I really liked the first one, Borrowers from Beneath.
Yeah. Mm.
I think it's a great update for the 70s when it was written for the mythos.
Sure.
But the transition of Titus Crowe, the second one, he kind of lost me. Because it was a lot more to me Flash Gordon than it was going on different planets and getting this sort of magical cyborg body and the princess of planet whatever falling in love with him. He kind of lost me on that one. So I've never actually finished the series, but it's considered probably either the best, that or Borrowers from Beneath are the best of the series.
Okay.
Hmm.
But I cannot for the life of me pronounce the word.
Is it like X...
So, and when I Googled it, of course, the second besides the one that talks about Lovecraft's work, it's like, this chocolate drink from Mayan culture. I was like, wait. I guess it's very similar in name.
Yes.
Oh, I was thinking it's Zycolotl.
Is it okay. Zycolotl?
Zycolotl, okay. Yeah.
Zycolotl it is. Ramsey, please call us and be on the show if we're wrong.
Yeah, Ramsey, come back on the show.
and that's a pretty, what, it's about a 300-page book, I thought.
Yeah.
So Gretchen might know a little bit more about this than I do, but I don't think the Zycolians come up a lot in the story, that they're more of just a plot device, and that the insects from Shagai are the most important adversaries in the story.
Certainly.
I thought it was just a planet. Like, the impression I was getting is one another one of those names that it's like, this is a dropped name, and just like all the other ones. That's why I felt like I didn't have a grasp of what I was reading, because I was like, I feel like I should have read something else before this, not knowing what was happening in the story.
Yeah. No. This is more about the planet. This is more about like the trees with mouths with lollipop arms. This is about.
Yeah, so that's the Zataclone, which are a race. And then the other race, it has a couple of names, is that our good friends at Chaosium added another race to the planet.
Well, of course they did.
So one is or has several different names, but the one that is currently in their monster book is the Death Vines of Zacatol, which are basically mobile Venus fly plants, traps.
Ah.
Tentacles, like, of course.
They're Audrey's.
Yeah.
Yes. Just, you know, right around this time of year. Perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, the 8th and an eclipse.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Just, you know.
On Rex Manning Day.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yep.
But the main race, which I think is just mentioned as kind of a slave race to the Shan.
Yeah, correct.
Is sort of like this large, giant plant or tree. Because it's kind of like Dagobah. It's a swamp jungle planet.
With intelligent, semi-intelligent. I want to say intelligent. They're intelligent enough to be a slave race.
Yeah.
So they're intelligent enough to do their own thing. The Zycolotti are like, as I said, like a trunk with a big face on it or a big mouth on it with lollipop tree arm things.
Oh. Yeah.
And the Shan use them to do things, I assume agriculturally. Maybe as guardians, but yeah.
Pretty much. And maybe the best description of the planet is kind of like what science fiction writers thought Venus was like in the 50s.
Oh, geez. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it was going to be this like swamp planet, this planet full of vegetation, and not a planet full of ammonia. Yeah.
Is that they thought it was going to, they thought it was like a, like had more water on it or something?
At one point.
In the movies, at least.
Yeah.
I think most of the astronomers knew by then. But, you know, the movies, they're always, you know, these jungle planets full of Zsa Zsa Gabors.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Especially that show Lost in Space.
Yeah. Or various other busty Hungarian women. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And also some Star Trek episodes.
Yes. Space.
Yeah, I don't know much other than that, guys. I'm sorry.
there's not really much of that. I mean, most of what we get is, I think it's throwaways from Ramsey Campbell and then given as ideas for the Chaosium Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah. No, it's pretty much those two sources is what we get from this planet, the people on it.
And one of the reasons why that is, it's still copywritten.
Yes.
So it was only written in the 70s. Campbell has always had a very good, not Campbell, I'm sorry. This is the other one that I often confuse with Campbell. But both of them have a really good relationship with Chaosium. So, I guess this was Campbell.
This is Campbell. You were thinking of the other British author.
Yeah. And that's where I think maybe I got a little bit tied here, because I was thinking that the insects from Shy Guy were part of Titus Crow, but I think I was wrong on that.
No, so. They're part of that story, the inhabitants of something. That
inhabitants of the lake and less welcome tenants.
And yeah.
And the insect from Shy Guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, is there a crossover that I don't know?
No, I'm confusing my part.
That's what I mean. Is like, so that's like, that's why I get so confused by these writers, because there's so many that.
Yeah, so I was thinking of something else. So anybody who's listening to this is going to mock me because I got confused on this. So you're right. This is a part of a short story, which is separate. And the Shy Guy are used quite a bit in Delta Green.
Yes. And I'm a little bit horrified how everyone confuses Ramsey Campbell for Brian Lumley.
Lumley, yes. And I am completely embarrassed myself and lost all credit confusing this.
Oh, please. You'll have to get through me first to get to you. Just say it. Bring it.
Because people have thought people on the show thought Ramsey Campbell, not Brian Lumley, was the one who smooshed Michelle LaRocque as Cthulhu girl.
So who did what?
Oh. So that was Lumley, not Ramsey Campbell. Ramsey Campbell's a sweet English gentleman.
He's all like, you besmirched my name, sir.
Yeah, honestly, one of the most pleasant people I've ever talked to in my life.
Oh, certainly. No. Yeah, no. I'm going to say that both men are fine men, but one ran out of the festival and like held a trophy out the window while screaming, and the other one hung out the whole festival, and him and his wife they hugged people and shook hands and were very lovely and kiss or grope anyone, didn't run out of the festival screaming to get into a cab. Yeah.
So, just completely all that part about me saying this was part of the Titus Crow books. No, I had a brain fart.
I was just thinking, I was like, because I'm not as verbose about these books as you guys are knowledgeable. So I was just like, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
No, it's totally cool. It's totally cool. I get confused sometimes too, and I have to be like, wait a minute. One of them's Lumley, one of them's not.
Guy has their version of John Carter, and which guy has their version of the Necronomicon? Those are always my like who's who of the Lovecraftian writers, is knowing which version of those characters they have, because they also much borrow those characters from one another.
Oh yeah. John Carter? Do you mean Ramsey Campbell?
Sure.
My brain. I'm sorry. Not John Carter.
Randy Carter?
Randolph Carter.
Randolph Carter.
Who's I think a cousin to John Carter. So that totally counts.
Oh my god. Chaos.
So rule 01 of podcasting.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Never apologize for anything, but yeah, or make excuses. But yeah, I have been a little bit of lack of sleep because of birthing baby goat. So, but yes, now we're on the right page.
Yeah.
Correct.
Joseph Carter.
Who the hell's Joseph Carter?
I don't know.
I think he was Jimmy Carter's brother. No, that was Billy Carter.
No, that's William Carter. Billy Carter.
Of the Carters.
I got some beer for you, Billy Carter. Billy beer.
Oh my God.
You have to be really old to get Billy Carter references.
Yes.
Oh man.
All right. Okay. So no more from the insects of Shigai, any of that kind of stuff. No more zooidal. Oh, geez, I can't even remember how to pronounce that, or what we were going with that.
Zooidal.
Yeah.
Zooidal. Yeah, maybe. Clottal.
You know, the people from Zooidai. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, we're done with that. There's nothing else to say about that other than gibberish, as we've demonstrated. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to talk about some mushroom people. Oh, man. Did this influence Mario Brothers in any way? We'll talk about it, but... we'll be back in a sec. Hey, Dave, what do you want me to throw in for the, do you have a Dave's Crossroads ready, or do you want me to?
Yeah, so you should have it. It's the one on aliens.
Okay, alien cool.
If you need me to resend it, let me know.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, cool. All right, sweet.
In Legacy Door, a lurker from space casts a shadow over time.
We opened our eyes upon the human world. We found ourselves lying on an especially yielding bed in a room displaying scattered relics of their shallow past, tied together by more recently produced items meant to blend with the relics. Typical.
A sensitive journalist dreams of unknown lives.
It seems like every time I close my eyes, they get stronger. I can't even say the last time I had a normal sleep, let alone a dreamless one.
An outspoken lawyer defends the suspect in an unspeakable crime.
And that client was Jonathan Strauss, held for the murder of his daughter Abigail and her companion Harrison Reese.
And the stalwart investigator tries to drag it all into the light.
Some of the Reeses and the Strausses have been involved with something that seems to include an obsession with bloodlines and longevity for at least decades.
Legacy Door is a weekly cosmic horror mystery podcast. An ensemble of actors tell a story, also available in paperback, Kindle, and audiobook. Available now.
Right. Moving on to the next part, just to remind everyone, if you like what you're hearing, like this episode, share it with people, subscribe to the podcast, find us on Facebook, we're under People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. We're on Twitter. I don't really check Twitter, so it's just kind of the automatic feed. If you just want to listen to us on Twitter for some reason, you can find us on any place, any podcatchers that are out there. Of course, Facebook, Instagram, and of course the YouTube, where this episode will be. And yeah.
This part of the show doesn't have a theme song. This part of the show doesn't have a theme song yet. Dave and DB and Gretchen go to the movies. Hopefully next week we'll have a real theme song. Yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back once again. We watched a movie, and we want to talk to you about it for some reason. But, yeah. So, I know this is a Gretchen pick.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It's like an easy, that's an easy one to call, like the low-hanging fruit there. No, so Matango Man is like, okay, do you guys, are you guys fairly familiar with Ishiro Honda?
Yes.
Okay, so like, you know, he's like the big director of quite a bit of films. He has a prolific career. He's on par with, he's like buddies with Akira Kurosawa. They did a short film thing together called Dreams. It was amazing, like several films. And also there was a bunch of different actors that were in that as well that I could go in multiple things. But anyways, Matango.
Dude looks good in a hat.
What's that?
I was going to say Honda looks good in a hat. He's like, any picture I see him, he's got like a nice hat on. I'm like, dude looks good in a hat.
Yes. Well, one of my favorite things about this film is it stars one of my favorite actresses from like Toho films, which is Kumi Mizuno. She is like the like sex symbol of like the 60s Toho era. Like she has kind of a very like sultry voice, and she has a pretty good singing voice, to be honest, which we actually get to hear in this movie.
Uh-huh.
And then also she was in.
unless you're listening to the. Well, I would say I think the version I had it translated in English. So.
Oh no!
Yikes!
Oh no! So you didn't get to hear the dang, that's a bummer.
Right.
No, but she her and Hiroshi Koizumi and Akira Kubo, which I think Akira Kubo is like one of like Akira Kurosawa's favorite actors too.
Yeah.
And Hiroshi. Koizumi also, and they're also in quite a bit of films. There's a lot of like crossover with Toho films and actors. They tend to be in several things. Kumi's my favorite film that she was in besides Matango was Invasion of the Astro Monsters. She plays like this alien character. Mm-hmm. I have a tattoo of my elbow of her in that role. Like how much I like her. Maybe I can show you.
Yeah. No, I felt like there was so many Godzilla actors, Toho actors in this that I expected to see certain people in this. And then I just assumed that, well, maybe they were playing the boat or the island.
Well, the thing about that set is, though, like, so here we are. I should probably break it down a little bit. We have these kind of like pleasure seeking kind of people that have like money and they're out like on a yacht and a storm breaks and they have to crash on this island. Right.
Yeah.
And the island is unpopulated for the most part. It's covered in like jungle and like moss and mushrooms, and they're kind of realizing their food stores are going low, and they kind of start investigating the island more, and you find out more about each person and like their what their role is to play. But like as a whole, it's such a cool set that setting is a common trope I get, but also what was really really cool about that set is that they made it slanted. And so it has like these weird angles on it. And honestly, I think some of the actors were saying they had like headaches after being on the stage for too long because it was so like weird and like disorienting, which I think is cool because it gives them an element of realism in the film that they're because they are becoming susceptible or succumbing to the the mushrooms, the gnocchi.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Oh, my understanding, it's written by a person named Fukushima, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and he is pretty upfront that he took the idea from The Voice of the Night by William Hope Hodgson.
Correct.
Yes.
Which the big difference between the two is that in The Voice of the Night, it's a married couple. It's just the two.
Have you read that book?
A decade or so ago. Yeah, it's a short story. But it's just the two. But my understanding is you just couldn't make a full-length movie on two. So that's why they added the extra characters.
Sounds good.
And I know that the film was kind of like, there was a lot of like tension about the film when it was released because the people like kind of looked like bombing victims from like Hiroshima Nagasaki.
Yeah.
Japan was like, ugh.
The reveal at the end. Oh, geez. Yeah, no, that's what upset a lot of people.
Totally. And this is such a, like, in its own vein, weirdly enough, I feel like this film has like a Lovecraftian element to it, even though we never really find out why the mushrooms become this way or why they like have this mutagenic property to it. But
you,
I feel
you
like
you can't get more Lovecraftian than a person who's mutating into a monster in a mental hospital.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and you have your trope of your Lovecraftian trope of like an unreliable narrator that's telling a story from a hospital bed.
You won't believe this story.
But so those things, like, immediately I picked up on when I first saw this film. Mm-hmm. And I think I probably saw this in like, I want to say like the early 2000s. It kind of was under the radar for me. I saw like snippets of it, not knowing what it was. And kind of like you, Deepi, when we were talking about this earlier in chat, was like Goke, the body snatcher, has a very similar vibe.
Yes. So
I could see why that those films would be kind of mistaken for one another.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, do you guys remember when we talked about the movie Annihilation?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
That's this gives me like pre-Annihilation vibes.
I think of Night of the Living Dead at points. Yeah, this feels like a pre-zombie movie.
Well, it's 1963, so it's like way after, right?
Oh, no. I'm talking like Night of the Living Dead is 1968, 1969.
Yes, I didn't realize that.
And like when they're like hacking people and stuff falls off. It's like, oh shit! Did Romero see this?
Probably.
And it's like he had.
And it's like this is like pre-zombie film in some ways for me.
Well, and it also is like that whole zombification of nature. It's that nature like takes us back.
Last of Us before The Last of Us.
Right.
Fucking far.
I love this movie, and I feel like it does not get enough love. And I know it has kind of like a silly score at the very beginning, but man, the payoff is so good.
Oh my God. Yeah, no.
You know what I think influenced it?
So good.
What's that?
Lord of the Flies.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I can see that.
I'm sure I don't know if Lord of the Flies was translated into Japanese by that time, but if the writer knows, you know, William Hope Hodgkins, I'm sure he knows the Lord of the Flies.
Sure,
and I think that's sort of one of the motifs is, you know, he keeps looking in, and that despite all its neon and sophistication, that Tokyo, you know, in a way, it's just as dangerous and unpredictable as the island. And you take these people out of this environment that just developed this sort of culture and culturism, you put them into their natural form, they begin to turn on each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's also like the being a person of excess and wealth generally gives you that a feeling of power. And so, as we know, all things with power corrupts, just like the mushrooms corrupting them. Yay.
Sure.
One of the things I was reading about was like, do you know the director, Steven Soderbergh? He was like wanting to redo this film, and thank goodness he didn't get a deal with Toho.
Oh, yeah.
I really do not want to see this film remade in an American.
No.
I mean, I'm sorry. I'm a purist when it comes to a lot of like kaiju horror, especially this kind of thing, like this daikaiju scary. It's so mature and so smart that I just feel like it had to be dumbed down to make it palatable.
And I'm not sure why he didn't go ahead and do Voice in the Night then.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's public domain. Unless
I think it's because he was so scared by this film. And so he was like,
and these characters probably.
Who's the guy who's all body horror? Who's all like David
Cronenberg?
Cronenberg. Yeah. I could see Cronenberg doing this and not being pissed off, or like
I don't know. He would make it like horny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely, definitely. And the next person I could see possibly doing this is last week's favorite, Del Toro.
Oh, really?
Maybe.
I could see Guillermo totally being like, okay, so they crash on the shore of this weird island off the coast of Mexico. But it's not mushrooms, it's conchs or something like that. It's the shellfish around it. But yeah, no. Oh man, he might listen. He's going to steal that. If he does, I don't care. I want to watch that movie.
So one thing, did you notice that there's sort of like these fade-ons where it's one scene is fading into another scene?
Yes.
So my understanding is they had to make or buy a special camera that both projected and filmed at the same time.
Yeah.
And that this camera was not only, it was the first one in Japan, it was the only one outside of Disney at the time.
Wow.
Man, yeah. Toho, man, there were some revolutionary, like, they did things with, like, perspective and compositing that were very innovative for their time periods.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Toho. Toho is amazing in what they've done.
Yeah.
And it's like there's a reason, like, the colors in this film are so great.
Oh, and right? Especially when they start becoming like succumbing to the becoming mushroom people, like when what is her name? When she turns, like the your innocent pure heart character.
Yes.
I kind of tend to ignore the names of those characters.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's Mommy and Mommy's her name is Kumi's name. Miki. Miki.
Yeah.
She's playing Akiko.
Yeah. Akiko's the actress
Akiko's the character.
Akiko is the character.
Yeah, she's like Akiko, she starts to become, she's like her eyeshadow's green suddenly, and she's wearing makeup and she's like, you should eat this gnocchi.
Yeah.
Man alive. Those tempting ladies. But no, this was, I just think this film is just, it's such a sleeper that people don't always know about it. I mean, I know a lot of like, so in my other life as a podcaster for a kaiju show, it's a really popular show it's a popular film among them. I don't know if it's, if they appreciate it for what its story is telling, or if they're just like, yes, Kumi Mizuno.
and personally,
which is totally valid. She's a tokusatsu like darling.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, totally, totally. For me personally, it's like it's the sets and it's like the acting and the overacting and the campiness. And it's like, oh, I know him from this. I know her from that. And it's like, oh, are they going to get off the island? And it's like, oh, my God, I know that writer from this. And oh, hey, didn't he play a scientist in that? Or,
well, I got one of those for you.
Yes.
Haruo Nakajima, who played Godzilla, is one of the Matango.
Okay. Because I've been joking about how he played the boat.
He was.
Or the island.
He was a Matango.
Okay. Cool.
He's so rad. Oh, man. I'm really sad that I didn't get a chance to meet him. I met his daughter and did an interview with her on a panel. And she is amazing and a force. But I'm so sad that I didn't get a chance to meet him before he passed away.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Well, it's really cool that there's people out there that are like trying to carry on their parents' works with like Victoria Price and like
Absolutely. Who
you just spoke about. And I think that's really cool. And oh man, this was such a good movie. I mean, as I told you before, and you figured out the movie that I was talking about, Gretchen. I thought this was going to be this black and white film about like this like mushroomy looking guy who like, you know, attacks these like pilots on this island in black and white. And, you know, I was going to start talking about how like I saw this film back in like 89 on the Portland media, like Channel 8 in Portland, which is the NBC. And they had this show called Saturday Night Dead, which went on right after Saturday Night Live. And it was Ned and Ted were like these like stoner metal dudes who watched movies from their Uncle Ed's video vault.
That's
and it was called
cute.
Saturday Night Dead. And it lasted for about 2 years. And then I was like, oh, I'm too old for this. I'm going to start watching Bohemia After Dark because I'm edgy.
Okay.
And Bohemia After Dark was this like videos and Dada film. And the music videos were all like super cool, edgy, cutting edge, like industrial and punk and new wave stuff at the time.
Oh, right on. That sounds wild, man. I'd like to see some videos of that. It sounds like we had something kind of similar to that, it sounds like, in Memphis. It must have been like the time, right? Like
yeah, early 90s, late 80s, yeah. Early 90s, yeah.
Thank goodness for those early Gen Xers to get us into this cool stuff.
Yay!
So one thing though that Gretchen talked about, the unreliable narrator,
mm-hmm.
is they almost went with a different ending.
Oh.
Where instead of pulling back and spoilers, they see that he's infected with the mushrooms.
Uh-huh.
He's gonna be normal.
Oh,
so it would have left, was it all in his imagination? Did he kill everyone?
I think this is more terrifying because it has a nihilistic quality to it, because you have to imagine that it's going to be kind of like the mushrooms are slowly going to take over. It's going to be a final destination, a finale or apocalyptic event happening.
That's yeah. But if the doctors don't believe in, if they're just like, well, welcome to Arkham, Japan. Right. I mean, welcome to Arkamu. I'm not even going to try to do the Arkham.
I'll turn off my camera and shake my head again.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, I love it for its tropes. And there really are these sort of deep sort of literary motifs in it, I think. Of what happens when you take a human being away from their safe, modern society?
Yeah. There's definitely some humanity versus humanity. What if you take some humanity or add something to humanity versus humanity? There's isolationism. Yeah,
those are those things that already lead into Japanese culture in general, like the idea of people that have this ability to be excessive and selfish is very foreign to Japanese normal lifestyle. Not that I'm an expert by any stretch of the imagination on Japanese like ethics and sociology, but from my own like research over the years and being there and whatnot, and I think that these people represent a type of society that is considered kind of looked down upon, because in Japan, like one of the big things is like one of the big cliches is like the nail that sticks out gets hammered down. Right.
Yes.
And so these people are like have excess and wealth and things like that normally you wouldn't see. And so the fact that they were acting so selfishly and so carelessly and just, being able to go on a yacht and, that kind of thing. And then having run awry of like the people that worked for them, So it's a very like a kind of a morality tale in a way. There's multiple things you could, like you were saying, multiple like literary, tropes, concepts, that would be, that were available in the story. I just think that's why I just love this film. I put it at such a high, like, this is on my top one, like top 10, I'd say.
It's fun. And my background, I just have to say, like, I've taken sociology classes based on Japanese culture, multiple years of Japanese language, and I've been a fan of like Japanese media since I saw toys that you could like press a button and the fist shot off and
Shogun Warriors Godzilla
79. And I'm like, what is this? What I can shoot the fist off this robot? This is awesome. I need to know more about this. and
Shogun Warriors, man, those toys are awesome.
Yeah.
Well, also I grew up
in jealous. My cousin had them.
I grew up in a media market where Godzilla and a bunch of teenagers fought global crime.
Mm.
Yes.
With Godzuki.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just wanted to see Gretchen's face when I said Godzuki.
Godzuki.
Godzuki's like the Scooby-Doo, Scrappy-Doo of like Godzilla. Gosh,
I would almost say he's that, what's that gray, Great Dane that's like the cousin of
Scooby-Dum?
Scooby-Dum, yeah.
Yeah, that's Godzuki.
I'm sorry. I try not to gather Schadenfreude for energy, but I do. Wow. Yeah, no, this movie was amazing. We've talked a lot about this. And my question, who are you in this movie?
Oh, my God.
What terrible person are you?
Let's see. I guess I would be, what is it? I'd be a Matango.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm one of the mushroom people because I just want people off my island.
Yeah, I just want just leave me alone. Let me chill over here.
All right. No, actually, those are the best because I was like, oh, man, I'm like the skipper guy who's like, I got to get out of here, who dies. Like, we got to be responsible. We got to do this. I got to fix my boat. And then, books off and then dies. And everyone's like, yep, that was a bad idea.
Yeah.
I probably end up like Akiko, though, getting kidnapped or some shit.
Yeah. And one thing why I think these characters are so good is that director gave each of the actors a lot of control over their character.
Yeah.
Because most of them had done stuff with him and before, you got to have a lot of trust in your cast to do that.
Yeah.
Well, and he's an auteur of epic proportion, even though this film was made after a good chunk of retirement time. Mm-hmm. He had been doing tokusatsu films for quite a while. He's renowned Mothra. I mean, the list goes on. But this film kind of came out of a retirement time. And so that's why it's like, wow, super impressive that it's this good.
Yeah.
Because you would think that someone had lost their touch at this point.
No, I first encountered this probably like maybe 2 years ago, and it was a lot better than I thought it would be.
Wait, you know one thing we haven't talked about, you guys, is the hallucination scene.
Oh my god, with the boat. That was
wild.
That was crazy.
Was it Kasai eats the mushrooms? Yeah, Kasai, he ate the mushrooms and he was all like having the dreams of like this weird like Tokyo nightlife. That was so bizarre. And to me, that was the only thing that felt tonally a little like way out of like left field. But I mean, because they hadn't proven them to be the mushrooms to be hallucinogenic in any way prior to that.
Yeah.
But I suppose that's kind of the point. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's how they keep them like stationary to where they grow into mushroom people. It's like, because they like fall victim to their hallucinations.
Yeah. No. How do you keep eating them? Why would you keep eating the mushrooms unless they do something like that? Is kind of thing.
And I keep maybe projecting things in because I know that in a lot of early cultures that mushroom visions were seen as divine.
Yeah.
And the thing I don't know, what I would have guessed that Japan during this time would have looked down on recreational or experimental drug use.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Totally. Like, there was this film, and then I think, like, let's see, Godzilla versus Hedorah was also like a really psychedelic one as well. But I think that was like the late. Let's see, was that the late 70s or the late 60s or early 70s? Let me see. Versus Hedorah. That one came out in 1971. Okay, yeah. So early 70s. So that, I guess, like, that was, maybe people were a little bit more accepting of that during that time period. I am not certain. This is, you know, Showa era is pretty still, like, still real young.
Yeah.
And people were very, like, conservative during the, like, Showa era, specifically.
Yeah.
Sorry if my mic keeps going in and out. I think it's, like, unattaching itself. So hopefully that doesn't sound weird to you guys.
No, it sounds fine.
Okay, cool. Sorry about that.
Yeah. But back to my question earlier. My question was, is who would you cast yourself of the human characters?
Oh, let's see. I guess I want to be Kumi because she's like hot and amazing. Like she's like, I mean, yeah, she's not a very nice person, but.
No, I mean, you I'm stole not my saying answer. Like.
You want me Kumi Mizuno too?
Well, yes, but I would love wearing the mushroom suit probably until I had to wear it for like 10 minutes.
I think of Dave as like being the survivor dude at the end who's like, you may think I'm crazy. You may think I have murdered everyone I know, but I swear to God. It's and true. I feel like I'm like the guy who's like, hey, everyone, let's eat these mushrooms.
Yeah. So I would see myself, honestly, as one of the Tokyo doctors. Because somebody just put a bunch of crap on my desk. What do I do now?
No, I was. I'm like from the crew before. Oh. It's like, hey, let's eat these mushrooms, everyone. Nothing wrong with these.
Then yeah, I'm gonna go with your pick. I'm gonna go with the survivor dude.
Okay.
Partly because I don't want to die.
Yeah.
Don't particularly want to be a mushroom person either, but. But no.
I don't want to be sunglasses. That guy was a creep.
And also, like, he was allowed to wear those the whole ding dang time.
Oh yeah.
But if we could get a time machine, we could go back and we could get extras as mushroom people.
Yeah, we could.
Oh, totally. That would be a cool time.
Yeah. I still am hunting down that there's a Sifubi figure of Kumi in this. That I've, like, I really want that figure so bad. Like, yeah. Mommy is, like, that's such a cool character. But, yeah, I would love to have the figure of her as that character. I know that there's, like, a couple out there.
That's cool.
They're just not on the, they're not cheap.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no, but. Matango is such a good film.
Yeah,
it is definitely. If people out there have not watched it, you can get it for 99 cents on Prime.
Or you can watch it on Dailymotion. You can.
That's in English, I think, on Dailymotion, and then
yeah,
I watched it on. I own it, but I also you can watch it on Criterion Collection.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
it's
no,
like a really good version.
This is a really good film. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm glad you guys liked it. I'm glad you guys enjoyed it as well and saw it again.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I was expecting something else. But, yeah, no, when I watched it, I was like, oh, this is good. This is good. But so next week we're going to be talking about Zoth.
Yeah.
And if you know what Zoth is, this is exciting.
I don't know what Zoth is.
And next week, we're also going to be talking, oh, This is another Gretchen film, I feel.
Yes.
Fright Night 2.
Oh my God, I love this movie.
I know it's got sexy vampires, so it's got to be Gretchen.
Oh, no, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, I've had some not sexy vampires in the past.
Yeah, no, but... if it's Japanese or has sexy vampires, it's generally Gretchen.
Let's now, this one I'm excited for. It's the soundtrack is like the bomb in this one. Yeah.
And now I'm thinking about it, it's like, oh wait a minute, I don't know if I've seen Fright Night 2. Maybe there's not sexy vampires in it.
I've seen one. I'm not sure if I've seen two. I'm gonna have to watch it.
Yay.
Next week, Zoth and Fright Night 2. So yeah, hopefully that'll all work out and we'll get that all going on and we'll see you all next time on the show.
Yes, we will. Bye, everybody.
Bye.